Well, here's your opportunity to talk with a really gutsy investigative journalist, Nicholas Skou, as we talk about his latest work, Spooked, How the CIA Manipulates the Media and Hoodwinks Hollywood. So we'll get to your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast and our special guest, Nicholas Skou, as we talk about his work, Spooked. And Nicholas, the book's just coming out, right?
Comes out tomorrow morning.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing indeed. Is this another movie?
It could be. But I have to say, I've been a fan of Coast to Coast for, I don't know, 20 years now. So this is its own reward, being on the air with you guys.
Well, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And we're going to go to the phones in a second. Just about every line is lit. Just where do we go as a country, Nicholas? Where do we go, knowing what we know, knowing what's been happening to us? How do we move forward?
As a nation, I mean, that's it's a tall order to answer that.
It is.
I mean, you know, it's the job of a reporter, and like the way I view what I do is to just try to get the information out there so that people at least have something that they can grapple with in order to like be aware and like have an idea of what they're confronted with. But I think that that's really sort of the most important step in this whole process, is just waking up as a people. Like, we just need to be aware of what's actually happening and not be like afraid of the wrong things and not be manipulated into reacting in ways that are not in our best interest. And so that's really the most important thing.
Where did the CIA go wrong? I mean, I see nothing wrong with an intelligence operation for a country, for a nation. It's important. You got to do that. But somehow it seems like they went rogue on us.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very important continuum that began very quickly after the CIA was formed, where things just went off track. And it was, you know, it was basically creating this narrative that any type of independent effort to resist the type of world order that the CIA wanted to be foisted on our sphere of influence, for lack of a better term, you know, was just unacceptable. And so, like, whether it was Iran or Guatemala or Chile and all these other places where the CIA decided that it was in America's best interest to step in and dictate what would happen, this ended up backfiring in terrible ways and just created a lot of chaos. So the CIA has always sort of defended itself with the sense that what it's trying to do is in the best national security interests of our country. But much of what ended up being done in that, for that purpose, achieved the exact opposite.
I think what they've done is the best interests of corporations.
Generally speaking, and like Guatemala is a really kind of clear example of that, because it was the United Fruit Company that had the most to lose from the direction things were going in Guatemala. And you had the lawyer for United Fruit Company being the brother of the director of the CIA, Alan Dulles. And so it was a really cynical cabal of individuals and bankers and national security officials that just screwed over an entire country in order to try to maximize their profits. And it worked so well. That's what was so scary, is that the CIA is so good at what it does that it just worked so well that it was so easily repeated in so many other examples.
But they could not get Castro, the one prize they tried to get.
That's true, and that's where things really started sort of backfiring for the CIA. And that's what, the effort to go after Castro, the Bay of Pigs, the whole confrontation that almost destroyed the entire planet, the Cuban Missile Crisis, this is where the CIA was put in check. And, for a long time, for a good 10 years, things changed and the CIA was under much more tight controls, like I was saying. But that people just don't understand how quickly that constraint was obviated by the CIA's ability to manipulate things in a new way, and how it was able to evolve, and how quickly the press that had become very confrontational with the American government, with the CIA, was put back in its place. And so that's the story that this book tells.
You know, Nick, during my father's era, World War II, if I were to have told him anything about the country and that the CIA was plotting this and that, I don't think he would have believed me in those days. I don't think he would have believed me. I don't think any World War II veteran would have believed what you and I are saying had we said it 20, 30 years ago.
Right. Well, Again, you know, there was, I think, a need for an agency like the CIA at the time that it was created. I mean, you have to look at what the Russians were up to, for example, and the Cold War was a pretty serious enterprise, and so it's understandable that an agency would be given that type of power to recruit people, to have that kind of influence over American culture and society. But the thing is that that's ancient history. People don't really understand that there's still these relationships that exist, and these relationships that have supposedly, you know, become part of history are actually still very much a part of what we're dealing with today. And it's very scary for people to be confronted with that.
To the phones we now go. Dennis is in Philadelphia. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Good morning, folks. Yeah.
Hi.
There are two famous quotes by two of the most respected people in journalism, and that is Helen Thomas of UPI and Walter Cronkite. And Helen Thomas once said that every morning in the White House, the CIA and all the apparatuses of the administration meet to tell the media what stories will be of it, what stories to report on for that day, what will be the story that day. And she said that if the reporter does not like it, he is either reassigned or outright fired. And Walter Cronkite once said, he said, every night when I end my program, he said, I always say, that's the way it is. He said, well, that's not the way it is. And there's been many times when I've been forced to button my lip.
Yeah, well, one really interesting example of this type of relationship with the CIA and the press is the Washington Post, for example, and also Newsweek and all these other elite news media organizations. They were exposed in a very interesting way, actually, by Carl Bernstein in 1977 in an article that he wrote for Rolling Stone, which, very interestingly, given that Carl Bernstein was a Washington Post reporter, this report did not appear in the Washington Post, and it never named anybody in the Washington Post, but it named many other reporters and editors in other news organizations and radio stations and TV and print media that were all working for the CIA, and this was all covered up. No one had known about this until the mid-1970s, but it was kind of an open secret within the media itself that they were following a script that was being given them every day.
We now go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Blair, you're up. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. And sure. Nicholas Scow, you're a great, great American. I met outed CIA agent Valerie Plame and her husband, Ambassador Joseph Wilson, when they were on a book signing a tour here in Sedona in 2008. And basically, she opened my eyes to the point that I realized that Vice President Cheney and Libby were always in the analyst's office at Langley preceding the war on Iraq. And this gets me to think, well, Valerie Plame and Ambassador Joseph Wilson, remember, Ambassador to Iraq, they're honorable Americans doing their job, and not all CIA operatives can be put in this clandestine point of view. It's a need-to-know pay grade kind of thing. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I actually have a whole chapter that deals with this and where I go through the experience that Valerie Plame and Joseph Wilson had, a chapter called Embedded. But, yeah, I mean, that was a really weird case where in some ways the CIA was the kind of voice of reason, I think, to a certain extent. The CIA was responsible for some very questionable intelligence that was being circulated. But, you know, that was what was fascinating to me, was to see just how all these, you know, bogus stories are created, and they get sort of like trialed out to the media. And ultimately the CIA was playing a game which backfired, where it realized that it was trying to create reports that it was being told by the White House they needed, and yet they never really expected the White House to act on them. But instead, the White House was like not only acting on these reports, but, you know, embellishing them and selling them, even more fantastically to the press. And so that's what happened to Valerie Plame and Joseph Wilson, was they became victims of this sort of backfired propaganda game.
What about the FBI? How involved were they with manipulating reporters?
Well, the FBI was more involved with spying on and pressuring reporters, I would say, than manipulating them per se. I mean, you had the most kind of fascinating document on the government's surveillance of the press and illegal domestic spying operations in the United States, much of which was focused on where leaks were coming from the government, particularly during the Nixon administration, was called the Family Jewels file. And CIA Director William Colby ultimately released this during the Watergate scandal. But it showed how the FBI was being used by the White House to spy on reporters and find out where they were getting their information from. And it was actually quite fascinating to read through these files and find out how certain reporters were so well connected, for example, with their government sources, that they had too many stories to write themselves. They would start shipping these stories to other reporters. And so the FBI was, it basically been used as a tool over the years by various administrations to try to control the press.
And Hoover was notorious himself, was he not?
Yeah, he had like his whole intelligence network. He used the FBI as a blackmail racket, effectively, to try to spy on not just, you know, news reporters, but political activists and politicians, and just build intelligence files on everybody that he could use as a way to try to manipulate people.
East of the Rockies, Ed is in Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Good to have you with us.
Your guest.
Thank you.
I do have questions for you, George, but I also have my main questions will be for your guest.
Okay.
I'm a former Special Operations Air Force combat controller in Vietnam era. My question to your guest is, where are you getting your information, and how old are you?
I was born in 1970, so that dates me as 46 years old. The information that I've been getting on Vietnam, for example, is from both reporters that covered it and CIA officers. I've mentioned Frank Snett by name, for example, who have spoken publicly about there.
So everything you're getting is secondhand. And I'm not trying to embarrass you, but I worked with CIA. I've been in certain countries that they said we weren't in. I have friends that are still there, and it's called MIA. So for me, I think you're a little young, and I really don't know where you're getting your information from.
Well, I just told you.
You just told me, but I'm telling you what I know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really try to get into the MIA question, for example, but I do try to talk about the way the CIA worked with the press to try to get stories put in the media that would get their point of view across about how the war was working. And it lasted right up until the very last days of the war, which ended much quicker than most people realized was going to happen.
Stop and let me talk. The very last days of the Vietnam War, I have friends that stood on top of that building and put people into those helicopters.
Well, nobody's denying that.
First of all, well, George, let me finish. You have no idea what you're talking about.
I got to ask you this though.
Sure, George.
Nobody's knocking what they did in wars.
George, let me get this across before somebody hangs up on me.
Nobody's going to hang up on you. As long as you don't swear, you don't get hung up on this show.
He's talking CIA. He just told me he was born in the 70s. I worked with the CIA. And you being a naval officer,
right?
You should know what my job might have
been. Well, of course, but my point is that are you denying that the CIA tried to use reporters? Because that's what he's talking about. It's not talking about what they've done in wars and issues.
George, no, I'm not denying anything. I don't know.
That's all he's talking about.
He's talking about something that I have no idea about. But I can tell you that I've been with reporters, and I could name you names, but I won't. But offhand, I will, that have been in battles that I was in, and they were right there.
I'm sure they were.
Guys were getting killed. I mean, he's talking these last days of Vietnam. He has no idea what went on during that last day. He has no idea.
It was horrible.
Beyond horrible. I put people on helicopters that were headed for naval ships and maybe coming to America. I also saw a lot of people left behind, and only because they worked with CIA and myself, children. I'm speaking of children.
Well, there were CIA people that were left behind at the end of the war. The guy that I interviewed, Frank Snepp, was one of the last ones out in Vietnam, and there were people that didn't get out that he was, personally trying to track down, you know. So I'm sure you're familiar with that. But this is not opposed to what you're saying. I'm not claiming that I was there or that I have some sort of special insight into that. But
I'm not trying to embarrass you.
Well, no, Ed, but I think you're talking about two different things here. We've got Nicholas talking about the CIA using reporters.
Well, I understand that, George, but okay. I'm telling you that I was right there when people were...
I know. Nobody's denying that. That happened.
George, and another thing, there's a very famous picture of Vietnam where a South Vietnamese colonel put a gun to a guy's head.
Yep, I've seen that picture.
Okay. Well, I knew who he was. I didn't meet him. I didn't know him then. I met him very, very shortly after that happened. And talk about CIA.
And he pulled CIA. The trigger, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yep. Yeah, he did. Now, you had a quick question for me before the break.
I have a question for you. My question to you, George, is as a naval officer, I don't know if you're in the reserves. I don't know.
Yeah, I did that. I did that for 9 years.
Reserves?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that basically answers my question to you, because it just seems like I can't even find the words. I don't even know if I'm going to say the right words. It just seems that you're missing the point on a lot of things.
On what?
Well, I figured you were a reservist,
Eddie. You got to be specific, though. You're saying you're saying things, but you're not saying what you're trying to say.
No, that's exactly the point. I am not, because I don't want to say the things that I need to say to you. And
all right, kid, I got to let you go because you're just not being specific. I mean, you nobody's doubting that you weren't in Vietnam doing what you were doing. I think you've missed the point on what Nicholas has been doing. For crying out loud. Nick, I can't say anything more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. I don't make any claim to have any special insight into this. My stepdad was a Navy veteran. He served in Vietnam. I've been familiar with it as a secondhand, person listening to people talking about it. So this is interesting to hear this gentleman share his point of view. And it was a terrible experience. As anybody that was there knows.
No, no doubt. You're not denying that it didn't happen. We'll be back with final questions. Welcome back to Coast to Coast with Nicholas Skous. We talk about his latest work, Spooked. We'll go to more calls in a second. So, Nicholas, as you do this, I mean, do you ever look over your shoulder?
You know, for me, the biggest risk is getting the story wrong. I remember talking to Gary back in the thick of it when he was working on uncovering the CIA's involvement with drug dealers, and I asked him that very question. I mean, I remember thinking, my God, you must be really worried about your phones being tapped or, somebody following you and stuff like that. And he told me the exact same thing, and it turned out to be very prophetic. I mean, it's your reputation as a journalist that's always, your biggest vulnerability, and your credibility is really your key to be able to make a living. And so for me, that's the biggest risk. But you never know.
By the way, I still don't know what Ed in Rochester was questioning in terms of what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling there's a lot of trauma, that came across in what this guy was describing. And I've written stories about PTSD. As a secondhand observer, for sure. But, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that were in Vietnam, and it's clear that their experience there has scarred them. And you know, it's I'm not the one to make sense of that necessarily, but it certainly doesn't surprise me that when you just even bring up that conflict, that it brings out a lot of emotions for people. So, yeah.
Well, and then it sounded like he was knocking by 9 years with the Navy.
Yeah. You know, George, you should know better. You were in the Navy, right?
Yeah, I was. And by the way, Nick, I have said repeatedly on this show, I never saw combat.
Right.
I stress that all the time that I've talked about the Navy. I always point that out because I don't want to be one of those type of reporters that say, I was in this helicopter and got shot down and all that. No, I never saw any contact. I was a public information officer. I was assigned to the Pentagon and places like that. CINFO, as we call it, Chief of Naval Information. That's what I did.
But, right. Well, there's, I mean, in my experience, there's two wars that are usually fought. There's the folks that were on the front lines that went through the pure hell, and then there's everybody else, you know, and everybody has sort of a different perspective on it. And a guy that was in the thick of the combat isn't necessarily going to be the best person to talk about all the lies that were created that created that situation to begin with, you know.
No, I mean, those were the men and women that stuck their necks out, gave their lives. Way more than whatever I did, to be sure.
Yeah, and as a reporter, again, I have nothing but respect for people that, you know, that are sensitive about discussing this kind of stuff. So,
but you know, to bring it home with what I don't think he was understanding was you're talking about the CIA's manipulation and control and placement with reporters for years and years and years. You were not questioning the things that happened at Vietnam. I mean, I sure hope he knows that it was the CIA that killed DM that got us going into Vietnam. That happened.
Right, yeah. And it was largely also the U.S. press that kind of helped the CIA sell this war to the American public. And people have the idea that reporters somehow undermined that conflict. But the other side of the coin is that the very same media institution that we're talking about here is what helped create it.
Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the show, Joe.
Hey, George, how are you, George?
Good.
I wanted to ask you a guest, Nicholas. Now, based on your journalistic experience, is there a way to either read a story or, if you're a viewer, to view a story that can allow you to navigate your way through the nonsense and be able to predict in what direction world events may be heading?
Well, I think because there's, and this is interesting because the CIA has such a much more difficult job in some ways than it used to when it comes to manipulating the press, because the media is now so...
Well, savvy.
Yeah, exactly. Savvy, but also diffuse. Like, there's so many media outlets out there that... for example, if you want to try to, you know, get the American media to pick up a particular storyline, you can't just plant that the way you used to be able to do it with a major newspaper.
Just put it on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. put it on Twitter, for example, or get like some, independent journalist to put out a story that then gets picked up. So what I think people need to do is read the broadest amount of reporting that they can get access to and try to sort of sift through it to the best that they can. But, it's a much more sophisticated game trying to fool the American public than it used to be. And as a consumer of news, I think it's important for people to try to read a broad array of different opinions and not just what they're already agreeing with in order to make up their mind about what's happening.
We're going to Hollywood, Maryland. Frank's with us. Hi, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
Thank you.
Nicholas, could you spell your last name, your surname, so that I could get the book this week? And I got two questions for you.
It's S-C-H-O-U, and the book is Spooked, How the CIA Manipulates the Media and Hoodwinks Hollywood.
S-C-H-O-U.
My question is, when the Berlin Wall came down, did the CIA knew... 6 to 8 months before it came down, that it was coming down, and that the politicians were getting all the accolades for it happening? And then my second question is, how would life be in America if the Soviets had won the war in Afghanistan without our interference, And I wonder what life would be like in America, all that money we saved and whatnot. And then where did Jimmy Carter get the authority to stop the Olympics? How do you think the President of the United States had authority to do that?
Well, this is going back to, you know, this is kind of a really fundamental question about how the CIA is able to dictate things that happen. And I actually remember in college, I had a professor that used to be in the national security line of work, and he was a political science professor. And we were all freshmen and sitting there getting our first lecture. And he predicted the fall of the Berlin Wall and said that this was something that was about to happen. And none of us could believe it. We all just laughed, you know, because I grew up thinking that, you know, the bomb could drop at any moment. And the whole world seemed very simple back then. But there were a lot of people that knew ahead of time that the Soviet Union was going to collapse. And Afghanistan was a key part of that. And that was again, a very specific CIA mission to try to speed that collapse. But we didn't think through what the consequences would be of getting involved with that particular jihad. So how things would have ended up differently had we not done that, who knows? I think that the Soviet Union was bound to collapse no matter what, based on a lot of its own internal contradictions. But we certainly sped up that process.
We sure did. Had we not supported the Mujahideen and Osama bin Laden with weapons and money, the Soviets might have continued that.
Yeah, well, I think that they had their hands full in Afghanistan, and that was their own Vietnam. That was their own quagmire. We certainly made it harder for them, but was it worth it, you know, for us to get involved? And did that end up helping out Afghanistan? Look at Afghanistan now. Look at our own current problems there.
Well, look at Vietnam.
Vietnam looked like a very brief war in comparison.
I mean, we lost 50,000 plus the Vietnamese and the Viet Cong and everybody else lost way more than that.
Yeah.
Men, women, and children. And after it's all said and done, what was accomplished there, Nick?
Well, we now have a new military agreement with the government of Vietnam to try to...
Right. The communist government.
The communist government of Vietnam that we, you know, lost all these lives trying to keep from taking power over there. We're now working with them to fight against China, who we've been trading partners with much longer than we have been cooperating with Vietnam.
So the bottom line is some of these countries, like the Chinese, I'm told 75 top people control that country. 75. God knows how much money they're making. And, you know, it's probably the same in Vietnam. We know what's going on in North Korea. The Saudi family controls Saudi Arabia. The Al-Shabaab family controls Kuwait. Bahrain is controlled. I mean, small groups of people are making a lot of money, Nick, running their countries.
Well, that's a subject for another book, I would have to say. I mean, that there's a lot of really interesting relationships that the CIA is involved with, where elites in countries that are, I think the term would be client states, that we basically like to prop up to sort of promote our agendas, they manage to figure out how to capitalize on that. But there's so many examples of that. We could fill like an entire two-hour show going through the last 40 years of that.
What is it about the humankind that just wants and strives for power and money?
God only knows.
Two corruptible areas. Andy in Manhasset, New York now. Andy, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
George, great program.
Thank you.
Nick, I just wanted to throw the idea to you that it might be the administration, not really per se the CIA. The CIA is only an arm of the administration. The thing that I'm speaking about is that there was a holiday thing. I've seen 8 decades go by, so my memory is as sharp as it was. But it was within this year. There was a holiday where the holiday fell on a Monday. And I was listening to the radio one, it was either Thursday or Friday night on my way home. And I hear on the radio, the newscaster is getting the newscast. He says, oh, just out, Russia went into Syria. I said, oh, my God, they went into Syria. I said, I can't wait to get home and look at the cable news. This is going to be all over the place. It's a big thing. I called a friend of mine who was a doctor. I said, wait till you get home, man. I just heard that Russia went into Syria. So I go home. I watch the cable news networks, all of them. Nothing is said about it. So I listened to the following hourly news that I heard the initial guy say that. They didn't say anything about it. I said, no, I'm not going crazy. Why don't they know about it? Well, I know several radio stations all over the United States. I called everywhere. No one knew anything about it. I called down in Texas at a midnight station where they're very conservative, right-wing kind of people. I said, sure, they're going to know about it. They knew nothing about it. The next day, which was the start of the holiday, I called a station up in Canada, and they told me, yes, they did go in yesterday. I said, how come in the United States? He said, well, you won't hear it in the U.S. There's a blackout on
this. No, this was to protect Assad, right?
No, this was to protect the American people's emotional state of mind until after the holiday was over. They didn't want to bum them out right away. So they held the news of something actually that happened, and they portrayed it like it happened.
See, I remember having the story, but I don't remember when I did it in relationship to the holiday. Because what was it, 6 months, a year ago, wasn't it?
It might have been, what's the one that kicks off the summer, Memorial Day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what it was
that one?
Well, it wasn't this May. It was probably last May, right?
No. This whenever Russia went in, on a certain day. It was announced.
God, but I think they went in months ago.
Well, yeah. Whenever they did, it was on a Tuesday when we found out about it after the holiday. But it actually happened on the Thursday the week before, where it would have been on the news Friday night. Mm-hmm. There had been a blackout about it.
Well,
you remember in Russia, by the way, George, your father, he wouldn't have believed any of this stuff because it wasn't around then. It wasn't around then. Believe me, it was not around then. You didn't have to mistrust your government. That's
but it was around then, I think. They still manipulate. You know, we remember Eisenhower when he left office.
I remember, sure.
Eight years.
Ran against Adlai Stevenson.
He warned us about this. I mean,
there were tanks going up Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, he said.
People said, what? No, that sounds like Russia. I said, no, that was part of the inauguration. People
that's right. Be wary of the industrial military complex.
Yeah, he said that when he left office. But the point is, the administration manipulates the news totally. I don't have a thing in the game as far as this election.
A dog in the hunt.
But, you know, in the beginning, when this guy, the Republican guy, Donald Trump, was looked at as a clown, every time he gave one of these speeches, and there were like 20 or 30,000 people, all the news would cover it. But you could, especially if you're lucky enough, catch it on C-SPAN. It was always on C-SPAN. Yeah. C-SPAN has a lot of boring stuff on. When he became like a real contender, all of a sudden, C-SPAN doesn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. Once in a blue moon, they put something on. They put Bernie Sanders on more than Trump, and Sanders is out of the game.
Yeah, no, I get your point.
Things are slanted so that to manipulate the general public to go in the direction you want, whether that's done by the CIA or the administration.
The media picks what they think is the most important. They want the most sensational. They want the ratings. And that's how they try to push and manipulate and do what they do. Nicholas, it's happened since the beginning of time.
I agree, but one thing to keep in mind is the degradation of the media as an institution. I mean, there's a lot fewer foreign bureaus than there used to be. The media itself...
economics has done that.
Exactly. So when it comes to like the fact that the Russians were invading Syria or whatever. I mean, we don't have bureaus over there. The war on terror is such that it's actually very dangerous, obviously, for reporters to be on the ground pursuing these sorts of stories. So that makes them even more reliant on being told what's happening.
Well, you know, by the time the evening news comes on, and I'm talking about the three major networks newscasts, it's old news because it's been on cable all day. It's been, you know, you can find everything you want on Drudge and the Internet. It's old news by that time. They did not have that back in the 60s and 70s. They were it. But today, it's a different game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the 24-hour news cycle does create this sort of pack mentality, a feeding frenzy where stories can be really easily repeated. And so if you can figure out how to seed a story that you want the media to tackle, it's very easy for that to just ripple out. But the thing is that
you know, you got to keep in mind that the media is in some ways much weaker than it used to be.
I think what they should do with the evening news now, this is the old producer's hat in me, they should specialize in the top story of the day and then cover it like crazy in that newscast. Because by the time, I'm telling you, by the time their 6 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock newscast comes on at night, it's old stuff. Everybody knows what's going on.
Right.
We're almost out of time. Lots of folks are still calling. Nick, thanks. I want you to tell folks where they can get your new book, Spooked.
So it's coming out in bookstores tomorrow. If you support your local bookstore, order it from them if they don't already have it. But otherwise, it's, of course, available on Amazon.com.
You promise to keep in touch with us?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lifelong pleasure to listen to the show, and it's great to be on the air with you.
Well, you've done a great job. Nick Scow, of course. And let me spell his last name for you if you want to peruse his book, S-C-H-O-U, and we pronounce it Scow. Nick, thanks again for being on the program. We're going to come back in just a moment with Dr. Jeffrey Long, God and the Afterlife, groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experiences. That's coming up in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Looking forward to that as well. Great night tonight to start the week off here on Coast to Coast AM.